This is Talking of Books with Isabel Abuhul, John McDonald, and the rest of the team.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
Only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Welcome back to Talking of Books. I'm Isabel Abuhul and my co-host is Penny McKenzie, and we're having a wonderful time having different guests in, and it's now the chance to welcome Gracie Anderson. Welcome, Gracie.
Hi.
Thank you for coming in. And the book that you've read and you'll be telling us about is Goodly and Grave by Justine Windsor. But before we get onto the book, could you tell us which school you're at?
I'm from DES. Yes. I'm in year six and we've just finished on Thursday. And for my high school, I'm going to be going to Jess Ranches.
Ah, Jess Ranches, which is very near to where the studio is. Do you live in Arabian Ranches?
Yeah, I do.
So that is easier for you.
It's very convenient,
you. Yes, yeah. Well, all my children went to DES. I'm going back quite a long time and it is a wonderful primary school.
It is,
yes. Yeah. Yes, so that's good. So tell us a little bit about the story in Goodly and Grave by Justine Windsor.
Well, she's obviously very young and her parents are quite helpless. So when she discovers this trick, how she can turn cards into whatever she wants in poker, like she's really excited about it and she thinks, oh, I'll win against Lord Grave. But then she doesn't because he has some of his own magic tricks. And because she's betted on if he wins, that she'll become his new boot girl, it's quite like a serious turn of events. So when she goes, she's really like curious and she thinks he's a really bad guy and she tries to find out more. She makes friends with this raven. And then the raven convinces her that he's really good and that they can work together. But then he ends up...
She makes a lot of bad decisions in the beginning, doesn't
she? She does, yeah.
She jumps to conclusions in a way that is quite astonishing. And I think it's because, well, this is my take on that. I thought that because she'd been so lucky, you know, when she was able to manipulate these cards and she was so in control of making sure her family did well and were okay, that she was confident in herself and that meant that she made these snap judgments and she suffered for that, didn't she, at the end of the day?
Quite badly.
Yeah, and she also was only looking just in front of her nose. She wasn't looking very further afield. You know, she made judgments about the other people who were working in the house. Not bad ones, but would you agree with me that she was really quick off the mark?
She was.
How old is she?
The little girl.
She's 12.
She's 12.
She's 12 going on 19.
Yes. Yeah. So what does she do? Does she become the boot girl? What would she do if she becomes Lord Grave's boot girl?
She didn't want to be Lord Grave's boot girl. She really resented it at first and she was like, oh, you know what? I'm not going to do this. She tried to find ways of escaping, but obviously he had tricks, so all his animals were magical and stuff, and they prevented her from leaving. And she wanted to get back to her family a lot.
So did she just have to clean his boots every day?
Yeah, so she just had to clean his boots, and she started getting suspicious when lots more boots came in, and it was like high heels and stuff.
Wear high heels.
Yeah. She was like, oh, there must be some guests. And there were, like, she'd seen guests coming in from the sky in magical carriages. And
which no one else could see.
Yeah, which no one else could see. So,
and that should have been a hint, I think.
Yeah.
But she was completely oblivious to what was obviously in front. That's what I kept thinking. I thought, if I saw magical carriages and nobody else did, either I was seriously unwell or I was seriously special. But she didn't pick up on that at all.
No, she didn't.
Gosh, yeah, but if you're 12, maybe you, could you empathise with her? Did you feel, oh goodness, yeah, I could have done that, or I would have done that if I had these special powers?
Yeah, whenever I read a book, if it's a sad book or something, I end up feeling sad because I feel like I am that person. So obviously I would have thought to myself, oh, I must be special, you know, I need to use these powers or I need to find out more about it. Other than just making, oh, Grave's a bad man, I'll listen to this raven that I have no idea who he is.
And Raven's a bird.
Yeah.
Yes.
But he's turns into a man later
on. Okay.
There's lots of magic and mystery. Yes. There's so much in that book, you know, all the little, the different kind of magical things like the soup.
The everlasting
soup, and the cook who, honestly, I would not eat the food that cook produced at all. And she was a great kid, because when she was presented with some of this truly awful soup, food that no one else would eat, she valiantly ate it. You know, she didn't want to hurt anyone's feelings.
She was a really nice kid. I felt really sorry for her that her parents were so useless.
But they loved her. This is the other thing. They were useless. Make no mistake. Her parents were utterly useless. I think they burnt the house down and all sorts of things, didn't they?
Yeah.
But they really did love her.
They did love her. But, like, I find it sad that she thought it was such a good thing to, like, be staying up all night so just that she could
and
have
breaking
this,
the law.
Yeah,
and, yeah.
Just so that she could have this small little cottage where she could go paddling and, yeah.
And at the end of the, I'm not going to give any spoiler alerts, but at the end of the book, she is quite torn about where she should be living.
She is, yeah.
And I think that's going to be the next book, is going to tell us a little bit more about that. I'm looking forward to that, which will come out, by the way, in July. So this one came out in March, and then the next one comes out in July, and then the third one will come out in June of next year. So there's a nice little series coming along.
Cool. Mm.
And you'd read the next one to find
out.
Yes. You really got to become in tune with the characters.
Yeah, I did. I really enjoyed the book. Yeah.
So what else have you been reading at school? What sort of books would you normally pick out from the library or you've read as part of your schoolwork?
I quite like drama books. But then again, so I read lots of Jacqueline Wilson and Kathy Cassidy. But after I'd finished all those books, I worked my way through the Michael Morpurgo series.
And those are very different, aren't they?
They're very different.
The one thing that I really like about Michael Morpurgo is that you can't open one of his books and say, well, this is definitely a Michael Morpurgo.
Yeah.
You don't know what's coming. There are so many different ways he tells stories, which makes him like a universal sort of... there's something for everybody in his books.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yes. And I think the names you've mentioned, Jacqueline Wilson, Michael Morpurgo, Kathy Cassidy, they are so popular.
They are.
With, people of your age. So any of their books, you could read any of their books and you're not going to be disappointed.
Yes.
Where do you get your ideas of books to read from? Who advises you? Do you talk amongst your friends? Do you get it from a librarian?
I talk to my friends. I talk to the librarians, but sometimes I'll just pick out a random book. And I'll read it, and if I like it, then I'll go and I'll find more by the author, and that's how I kind of find my favorite books.
And do you go onto the internet and go onto the websites of the authors? Is that something you do, or is your relationship very much tactile and the actual book rather than looking to see what else is out there?
Yeah, I look at Jacqueline Wilson's website a lot because she
why?
Was. I really like her style of writing. It's really informative, and she really goes back into history, and she takes stories from history and she makes it into her own, and I really like that. So I do. That's why I look at Jacqueline Wilson's website. I look if she has any more books coming out. That's why I went to when she came to Dubai for the literature festival. I went and I spoke to her, and I got.
Inside track on what was happening.
Yeah, I got some of my books signed, and yeah, so that was really nice.
And she's amazing, isn't she?
She is,
and
yeah.
And she does a huge amount of research. So when she was writing about the foundling...
Yeah, she was...
Opal, was it Opal? Was the main character Opal, or did that come later? Hetty Feather. It was an absolutely fabulous book. I mean,
I loved the series.
One of my favourites. And I actually asked her, and I think she said to me at that time that was her favourite of all the books she'd written.
And the interesting thing about those, which are very popular, is that they're getting longer. You know, a lot of her books are shorter, and those are nice doorstops, which I love. Big, thick books.
Yes, and particularly once you've sort of overcome the technical points you need to be able to read fast and forget about it's never a struggle, then you can take longer books. I'm just going to give our listeners another quiz question. Name the month that follows Ramadan. We're in Ramadan now, and then Eid will be declared, and we go into another month in the Islamic calendar. Just send in the name of the next month that follows the month of Ramadan to 4001, and please put your name, and we will choose one lucky winner towards the end of the show. Obviously, the Islamic calendar follows the lunar calendar and not the Gregorian calendar, and it moves.
Yeah, so don't say July.
No, it's not July, I can tell you that. So it's quite fascinating because it's a lunar, it gets shorter. So Ramadan can be in the summer, and it takes 30 years to have the whole cycle for it to come back to where it is now. So next year it will be 10 days earlier, and each year it goes 10 days earlier. So because I've been in Dubai for such a long time, I've had it all through the seasons.
Yeah, you would have.
I think I'm on my second going through times. And obviously the best time is when it's in the winter, because it's not such a struggle. When the weather's this hot, I think everyone, suffers.
You're flaking
more.
Out, you really
yeah.
are.
Yeah, everyone's trying to get on holidays as quick
yes,
as they can.
They are. And so when it comes in the winter, it's a much, I believe, it's a more pleasant experience. So we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with more from our young reviewer today, Gracie Anderson, and the book that she's reviewing for us is Goodly and Grave by Justine Windsor. Do stay tuned.
Young reviewer, young minds, big ideas. From Agatha Christie to Jeffrey Archer, we've got it covered. Talking of books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye 103.8. Now, back to the team.
Welcome back to Talking of Books. We're in our young reviewer slot with Gracie Anderson, who is telling us all about Goodly and Grave by Justine Windsor. I'm just going to repeat the second quiz question. What is the name of the month that follows Ramadan? We're in Ramadan now, and when Eid is declared, we go into another month. It's part of the Islamic calendar. We're getting lots of right answers, but not all of them are right. So you can check with Mr. Wiki, who I'm sure will help give you the right month if you don't know. So the month following the month of Ramadan in the Islamic calendar. Text in your answers to 4001. And please put your name.
Yes, I was going to say your name would be useful.
Yeah. So in this book, there is something called A Penny Dreadful. Do you want to tell our listeners what it is all about?
So it's basically a newspaper. Obviously, it's not a very good newspaper. That's why it probably only costs a penny. And it tells them all about the missing kids that go missing over the years. And it reports them tirelessly, but it comes up with really weird conclusions to why they've gone missing, like zombie attacks. And they're saying that doctors and scientists have come up with these. So it's not very reliable, but it plays quite a good part in the book, because it does, it helps Lucy bring.
Well, they tell you a little bit about, they have articles about each child, don't they? When the child goes missing, they talk about them, and that helps her when she's to find them. So basically the story is that these children all start going missing,
and
everybody wonders about how and why they go missing. Yeah. And the story is about how we find out what really happens to them. And the kidnapping is also on different levels, isn't it? Because there's lots of different ways that people get kidnapped, aren't they? Because you could say that all of those children have been kidnapped in the story.
You could. But then at the end of the story, once they've solved it, a lot of the children have been recovered, but some of them still haven't been recovered. So some of them could just be different scenarios, and I'm sure in the next books they'll tell us, maybe they'll find the remaining kids.
Well, one hopes.
So Lucy is a bit of a detective, would you say? Is she trying to solve the mystery of the missing children?
Yeah, well, she's really curious.
Not because she's not solving the mystery on purpose.
Yeah, she kind of does it
accidentally. She kind of falls into it, doesn't she? And my feeling is that Lucy was in a way kidnapped.
Yeah, she was.
Trapped into being kidnapped, she was. Well, which is why it gets so confusing, because who are the good guys and who are the bad guys? You have a good person
Very
doing
confusing.
A bad thing for the right reasons, and you have a bad person, and you can see why the bad people do what they're doing. They've lost something and they want it back, and they're prepared to take great risks, and they're prepared to make a lot of people suffer to get what they want. Mm. And yet they also have feelings, you know. So it's quite... You know, I felt quite sorry for who was the lady? Amethyst.
Yeah,
I did feel sorry for her in a way.
But you said that it's quite good, because as you're reading it, you think, as we all do when we're reading a book, we think, oh, that's the good one and that's the baddie, the goodie and the baddie. But in this book, you sometimes think someone's good and then it turns out they're not.
Yeah, this is one of the very few books that I've read that are Justine, she's really good at, like, changing your mind, like, on 24/7.
Yeah, so that you have to, you really engage with the story. You can't just sit back and autopilot through it, because you might make your mind up, but then the next page, you've got to unmake your mind up, because she's given you more details.
Yeah.
And it sounds like there's a lot of humour. Is there humour in the book as well? In a funny way?
I mean,
funny, quirky
of.
Way.
Yeah.
Come on, that cat with his...
The cat's very funny. The last
And the
sentence,
cook is very funny.
The last sentence, I'll read it to
you.
Oh,
please
it's
do.
Really funny.
Please do.
So Phoebe, her cat comes in, and Smell, who's obviously, he's magical, he can talk, he goes, well, hello, he said, things are certainly looking up around here.
And that's
so it's
the last
quite
sentence.
Funny. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and he's a
when
very,
Phoebe walks
he's
in,
a
yeah.
manky-looking, bedraggled cat, isn't
yeah.
he? And this gorgeous, slinky cat comes in.
And he's like...
his life is looking up.
Yeah.
So he's benefited, definitely, by,
yeah.
by,
he definitely
by doing
has.
That. Yes. And so are you going away over the summer at all, Gracie?
Yeah, we are.
Where are you going to?
We're going to Italy on July the 8th, and then we go to Australia in August.
Gosh, that's a long journey, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, to get to Australia.
And have you chosen some books to take with you?
Not yet, but we're part of the Mall of the Emirates Library, the old library.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, that's where Penny volunteers.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
So it's really nice, because you get to take out lots of books, so I'll probably take out quite a few from there.
Yes, and take them off on your journey and have lots of reading.
Yeah.
Yes, that's great.
So you're a book reader, not a tablet reader?
No, I don't like tablet reading.
Well, I have to tell you, I was reading this morning and I decided that I didn't like my tablet very much because I got a bit of a crick in my neck, which I've never had before. That was kind of must have been lying a bit funny on it.
Yeah.
And they're so solid, aren't they? They're unlike a book, which is so flexible.
Yeah, and I love the smell of a book.
Yes.
And it's really
it's just completely different, and you do get cricks in your neck when you're reading all these, you know, if you're reading it on a Kindle, on a phone, on a tablet, it's just not the same, because it's a hard cold item.
And you can take your book anywhere, like you don't have to recharge it.
No.
You don't have to connect it. You don't have to.
No, it's just a very, very good, device. And of course, Penny Dreadfuls have been around for a long time, and they were called Penny Dreadfuls because books for the masses cost a penny, and they were almost published on a weekly basis. So, for example, Charles Dickens, I think.
So was he published in Penny Dreadfuls?
I think he was.
Okay.
I think I might be just saying that.
I know he was serialised. He was definitely serialised.
And then it was
he?
Serialised, and. So for people who couldn't, and they had to wait, can you imagine? You'd get it, excuse me, chapter by chapter. And I think it was, what is the tragic heroine in Charles Dickens who she dies? Oh, help us out, someone, please. But it was the whole nation were waiting with bated breath for the next week to see if she'd survived or not, and sadly she doesn't.
But it's quite clever, isn't it? Because I was actually speaking to one of our volunteers who has actually done, is working at the moment on a serialised story, and you have a number of words that you have to stick to, and this would actually be a really good exercise for budding writers, wouldn't it? You have a number of words that you have to stick to, and at the end of it, you have to have a little bit of a cliffhanger, don't you, so that you get somebody to read your next bit.
And Charles Dickens was an absolute genius at doing this, and it will come back. Nell, it was, wasn't it, little Nell?
And she didn't make it.
No. But, I mean, you know, it was like in an age before television, an age before Twitter, all of these things that, you know, people would just, and they'd buy their Penny Dreadful and share it with all the family. And, you know, people were distraught to find out that she hadn't made it. So
but we do that even now. I mean, even with cartoon strips, for example, I think there was a Prince Valiant in a magazine called Look and Learn, and you'd get a strip. It was literally one strip every week, and you had to get the next one so that you could see what happened next. Yes. Very exciting.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure, Gracie, to have you on Talking of Books today and to learn a bit more about the book you've reviewed, Goodly and Grave by Justin Windsor. Now, just tell us, what age group do you think this book would be for?
Probably 10 to 13.
10 to 13.
Is a good age, because it's got quite a few big words in it. And I don't, personally, I don't enjoy a book if I don't understand any of it. Like,
what do you do if you come across a word you don't understand?
Well, I have one of those bookmark dictionaries.
Yes.
So I use that. Or I take a guess, because, like, I can usually figure out what it means from the sentence that it's in.
It should. Good writers, if they use big words, even I read a word this morning, and I'd never heard of it before, and I've marked it, and I will go back and check it, because I think it's important to do that. Because I sort of got the sense, but I thought, is this an error, or is it...
But this is why... A tablet does come in useful, because you just press it, and then which is quite. But I'm interested, because I've seen those bookmarks, and I've always wondered, is it actually a really useful tool? But you have just shown that it is. So that's
it is. It is very useful.
You'd recommend it for somebody?
Yeah, but it does fall out your book a lot, so it's not a very good bookmark, but it's a good dictionary.
Okay. Well, that's good to have it, and it's good to, you know, not just say, oh, well, I didn't understand that, I'll continue on. You can actually, because it is irritating if you can't do that. We're going to take a break, and thank you so much for being with us today, Gracie.
Thanks for having me.
And have a wonderful holiday.
Thank you, you too.
Lots of reading, and hope you'll come back again on Talking of Books, because you've been brilliant. Thank you, Gracie.
Thank you.
All the best. Short break. We'll be back after this.
Young reviewer, young minds, big ideas. From Shakespeare to Tolstoy, Stephen King to Danielle Steele, this is Talking of Books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye 103.8. Now, back to the team.
Welcome back to Talking of Books. And it's a pleasure to be joined by Rania Abdurrahman, who is bringing us today's books from the Arab world. And you're focusing on children's books, aren't you? Which is, I know, a great love of yours.
Yes, good morning, Isabel, and hi, Penny. It's great to be back, and I believe so much in the importance of books for children, and I'm glad to see that we're getting more and more interesting books in Arabic for children, and I'm going to be talking today about a new series, which is called The Adventures of Tame and Sammy.
Rania, we've got little translations here of the first chapter. Were those done by you?
Yes. They're just really, really quick, informal translations
but
that I did.
But you're brilliant, because you did that the last time you were on, and it was just amazing. I think you did a translation of A Small Death by Mohammed?
No, it was Indexed by Sinan Antoun.
It was incredible. It was incredible. And it does really help us get a flavour for it. So now, things are changing within... Arab world publishing for children, because there was this complete overbearing thought that any books for children have to have a moral, which yes they do, but they also have to be a bit preachy, and there definitely can't be any fun, because reading a book is a very serious matter, and you do it like eating your Brussels sprout because it's good for you. So, well, what about these books, Rania? The Mysteries of Tame and Sammy.
Well, I'm glad to say that I found them quite fun, Isabel. I'd like to actually perhaps give you a short idea about each one of them. The first one is called The Mystery of the Wooden Door, and this is the first book in the series, and it's about a little boy, Tame. I would say he's about 10. And his next-door neighbor and friend, Sammy, and they have a chance to earn a reward for doing some chores for their elderly neighbor, Umar Kenan. But the problem is the boys are just a bit scared of Uma Kenin. She's very old and she looks scary. There are rumors in the neighborhood that she's a kidnapper. Now, Tame wants the reward, and he comes out as a sort of very logical child. He looks things up, and he knows these are rumors, so he says, well, according to the dictionary, rumors are just false information that spread from person to person. So he goes into Uma Kenin's garden to pick her oranges for her because he wants this reward, and his friend Semi comes with him. But then they hear this crying behind the door in the shed of Uma Kenin's garden, so they're terrified, and they quickly make their getaway. And
they assume it's obviously a child, a kidnapped child.
Yes, they do. And also they see Uma Kenin walking up to the door with a baby's bottle in her hand, and she warns them away from the door, and she says, you're not allowed to.
You know what? I know what it is. You've just given me, because you only gave us the first chapter, so I'm left hanging now.
Yes. Mm. So what do you think it is, Penny?
If I say that, I'm going to give it away, aren't
well,
I?
Yes.
I think it's a goat.
You may be right. You may be right.
But because goats do sound very childlike when they're crying,
don't
and
they
you
just
can feed orphan goats with milk,
yes,
bottled milk. So,
but it takes Tame a while to figure out that it's a goat because he thinks it's a dog.
Okay.
when he rescues it.
Yes, but he hasn't had the... You see, I have heard a
yes.
goat crying.
Yeah.
And
yes.
honestly, that's a guilt trip and a half, you know? Mm-hmm. I think we were... you know, when you have a whole lot of... A herd of goats, whatever you call them. I suppose it's a herd of goats, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. When the kids are born, you've got to tag them. You know, they've got to be... And they make a hell of a lot of noise, and they make you feel really guilty for doing it.
Oh, I'm sure. My goodness, that sounds very painful.
Yeah, I don't know that they ever tag goats in this part of the world.
I don't know.
They ever do that.
So how do you know which goat is yours?
The goats know. Oh, the mummy. You mean that they seem to know.
No, the mummy goat knows who her baby goat is, but if my goat goes wandering off into, you know, my...
Neighbours,
or even worse, my neighbour takes my goats. Mm. How do I then
I don't know that. They don't. They don't have any... I don't know that whether they brand them. We'd have to find out, because you see goats wandering, not so much now, but before they'd wander all over the place. And I don't think there was any goat napping that I ever heard about. And the same with camels. Camels would be much more valuable than goats. I think that camels were branded, but I'm not sure if goats ever were.
Well, you know, my favourite thing with Botswana, there would be cattle all over the roads, mm-hmm. and they had, the municipality had, you know how you have a dog pound that goes and collects stray dogs? They had a little truck that used to go and collect stray cattle, and you had to pay a fine to get your cattle back. But the fine was the value of like a packet of crisps and a Coke, you know. Mm.
It wasn't going to put them off. So, Tame and Sammy are having to get over their fear, as it were.
Yes. But the thing is that Tame, I mean, he got over his fear and he decided to rescue whoever the kidnapped person was, and he only told Sammy about it, and he said, if I'm not back in an hour, you know, call my mother. And the thing is that Tame. He makes quite a discovery in the shed, as we've said, and he gets a bit carried away, so he forgets to tell Semi that he's actually back, and he gets into big trouble with the best of intentions. I don't want to say a lot more about the details of what happens, because I do hope that children will read this book and find out.
What age group would you say would like this this book?
I would say 8 to 10, maybe.
Yes.
Maybe
yeah.
11.
And the kind of Arabic that's being written in?
It's written in standard Arabic, but it's simple to understand. It's I find it very accessible. And because it's a funny book, and perhaps I like to talk about that a little bit more after we talk about the second book, I think that it's very attractive. I think that maybe we need to make an extra effort to attract children to read in Arabic.
Through humour, do you think that's important?
I believe that humour is extremely important. I mean, in English, I think that humour is one of the most popular genres in children's writing. And I believe that it's a type of children's book that that we should take really seriously.
And also not having perfect characters, because if you look at Horrid Henry by Francesca Simon, you know, I mean, he is so naughty, but it makes children feel that bit better, because no child could ever be as naughty as Horrid Henry. And there is always a moral in the tale. He does get away with murder, but it makes every child feel actually, oh, I'm not as bad as that few. You know, no matter how naughty a child is, they can never be that bad.
Yes, and I think it's off-putting when the characters are in a book are just too perfect or too well-behaved, or whenever someone does something bad, they immediately, you know, learn their lesson.
That's not life, is it?
No, it's not, and it's too contrived, and I think that our children are much, much smarter than that, and which is why I like the characters in this book. Tame, for example, is very precise with time and facts. He likes to think about how many minutes things take. He likes dictionaries and encyclopedias, and he's always trying to educate Sammy, who couldn't care less.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sammy's quite forward, isn't he?
Yes.
Sort of instructing his friend's mum to make him, you know, a sandwich, and
yes,
just makes himself at home wherever he is.
He does, because his mother sleeps in most mornings and sometimes forgets to wash his clothes. So he relies on Tame's family for food and clothes quite often. The children are also quite observant. So Tame will often say, well, this is the expression that my mother makes when she's about to tell me off. Or
this is what she's going to follow on with.
Yes.
Yes, I picked that with your little translation. That was quite delightful, wasn't it?
Yes.
The children saying, well, my mother always says this. And when she says this, she also says this.
Yes.
That kind of thing.
Yes, exactly. And when they see Omukenen, for example, the elderly neighbor, they comment on the fact that her eyebrows are drawn on. And children are like that. I mean, they're very observant, and you might not always like what they observe, but they will tell you what they see. And I found that quite realistic. Tame is at an age where he still enjoys a hug from his mother, but not in front of his friends. So it mentions another friend who got teased about that. With Sammy, he's Tame's loyal friend, and Tame says he never lets me down easily, and by that I mean he always lets me down, but not easily.
But that's great.
Exactly,
isn't it?
It's funny. And then, I mean, Sammy is a source of a lot of the gross and even toilet humor in the books, which is something that appeals to many children.
Yes, but it's actually frowned upon. This is the trouble, because I can remember someone phoning up and saying that they'd read one of these picture books and that there was a camel in it who was naughty and was doing naughty things, and where was the moral in this tale, and they shouldn't be allowed to publish things like that. And, you know, she was my age, and she said, you know, I'm not reading those books to my grandchildren. And I said, but actually, that it's very funny. It's very funny. And children, it's this sort of the moralistic preaching, taking everything that could be enjoyable out of a book and just, you know, making it a bit preachy, which has to stop if you want children to pick up books for pleasure, I believe.
Well, I want to show you this little illustration.
Yes.
And this is Sammy taking his revenge on the doctor who's about to give him a shot. So I want to...
Oh dear!
I want to tell you the extent of the humour. When I say toilet humour, it's there.
And
well, there's something to be said for sedition when it comes to children's literature.
Yes, yeah. And children would absolutely love that, because they would, oh dear me, they would be ticked off for getting away with something like that. But children, they like to say words that they know are, you know, connected in a way to toilet humour and things like that, and all sorts of things. So I think this is going to be a very popular book. But also, looking at the characters in there, they're very international. Although the book is in Arabic, and it's obviously the names of the children are Arabic, it's not by what we see absolutely set in one place or another.
That's a good point, Isabel. Actually, the book doesn't mention at all where it's set. The children, as you said, have Arabic names. There's Arabic food in the book, so Lebna and with olives and mint. The weekend is Friday, but at the same time, to me, it feels a lot like American suburbia. They have backyards. They do chores for the neighbors. Tame talks about mowing the lawn himself.
So it's sort of an urban environment rather than a rural one, which is very traditional and relatable.
Yes, but these to me are really, really American cultural references. They talk about pinky promises. These are not things, as far as I know, that are from Arabic culture, but I do know that children are in the Arab world are exposed very much to global culture. So, for example, they talk about, the book talks about Finding Nemo, the film Home.
They talk about websites and messages from the school coming on the way. But isn't that a consequence of being this generation? For us, it's kind of alien because we lived in a world that was slightly smaller, in that you had your community and what happened around you. But now the world is such a small... The world is a smaller place rather than your community is small. And so you have these cross-references, don't you?
Actually, I think that the website and the online communication was so realistic because this is how the children communicate now.
Absolutely. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back with more from Rania and the Arab world section after this short break.
From Shakespeare to Tolstoy, Stephen King to Danielle Steele, this is Talking of Books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye 103.8. Now, back to the team.
Welcome back to Talking of Books. I'm Isabel Hall. Co-host today is Penny McKenzie. And we're in our Arab world section. And thanks to Rania Abdurrahman for telling us about this lovely series of children's books in Arabic with key characters, Tame and Sami, who seem to have a lot of fun. But there are also some underlying serious issues. I'll just repeat one of our quiz questions again for our listeners. Name the month that follows Ramadan in the Islamic calendar. Send your text in to 4001 and please put your name. We've got lots of right answers, so keep them coming. And we will choose a lucky winner towards the end of the show. So the next book, because this is obviously a series about Sami, Tame and Sami. So tell us a little bit about the next book that you read, Rania.
Okay, the next book is called The Secret of the Magic Growth Potion. And in this book, Tame and Sami are just starting the new school year. And they go to school and one of their classmates, whose nickname used to be Little Chick, has grown big and scary over summer, and he's decided he's going to rule the class. He tells everyone he took a magic growth potion. He calls it the MGP to make him grow so tall, and he won't tell anyone what was in the potion. But Sami offers to give him 10 bars of chocolate in return for finding out what the potion is.
I would have won over. I would have given everything away.
So he tells him, and meanwhile, Metin and his twin henchmen are terrorizing the class, so they're taking everyone's food and lunch coupons. And he also ruins Tame's football and threatens to hurt him if he doesn't bring another one in the next day. So Tame is too afraid to tell his mother about all this, and he asks Sami to bring his ball in, and that's how he gets roped in into helping Sami find some quite unusual ingredients for this potion that he wants to make,
the magic growth potion.
Mm. And this doesn't end well. And Tame ends up in trouble with his father because of Semi's idiotic behavior, and he actually takes a fall for Sami. And I'll stop there. But I hope the children will read the rest of the book.
So the serious issue here is bullying, which... really has, I think, more and more been recognised by schools, and they do all they can to stamp it out. But it does happen. It does happen, and it has always happened. But I think now that, you know, children are more empowered to
say something,
speak about it, and these kind of books are really helpful because they sort of give a pathway for children maybe to discuss it with their parents and so on and so forth.
Rania, it was interesting because what you've said when you've just sort of describing a little bit about the story, you mentioned that this boy who's the bully was actually quite small previously, so he'd been teased himself.
Yes.
Is that covered in more depth?
It's
Is
not.
There an empathetic kind of level that comes into it at all?
It's touched on very lightly, Penny, and I think that the author has taken a light approach to this subject. But it's an opportunity for perhaps parents who read this with their children to discuss these topics, because it did mention the Tame, for example, mentioned that they there was a song that they used to sing about Metin last year, actually making fun of him being small.
Yeah, so who's the bully and who's the bullier?
So you need to think. I mean, he's now grown and perhaps he's taking it out on the children. Often, and we know that bullied children are often victims of some kind of violence themselves. So it's a complex issue, and I think both bullies and victims need help in situations like this.
So do these stories take place a lot, sort of like on the in the children's domain, at school, in their spare time, sort of out and about, and without parental sort of influence being too close by?
Yes, I mean the parents are. Figure in the stories, but the children are very much the ones with agency and the ones making things happen. I mean, in the first story, Tame takes the matters into his own hands and decides that he's going to save the kidnapped person. And in the second one, he really wants to avoid talking to his parents about the bullying. He feels like he's going to get in trouble, because if he tells them, they're going to school, and if they go to school, the bully will take it out on him. But Tame is a stickler for telling the truth, so he comes up with all these creative ways of answering his mother and not telling a lie, but still not telling her what happened. And that's another thing that could be a good talking point for parents with children, because I just talked about this with my son, and I said, you know, if someone did this, what do you think about it? And he said, well, technically he didn't lie. And I said, well, all right.
That's excuses coming up, isn't it? Yes. He's saying that even before he's in the same situation.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And it also touches very much on friendship and loyalty, and taking the blame for one of your friends, you know, not ever giving away. And that was a very, very strong part of my secondary school. I can remember actually being caught for breaking a school rule, and you know, the deputy headmistress sort of interviewed me. I was probably 16, 17, so it was at the and we'd gone out of school without permission, you know, which you're not allowed to do, certainly not then. You know, she said, and who was with you? I said, I was on my own. There was no one with me. It was me completely. And then, of course, she interviewed my friend, who said exactly the same. And so, you know, but it was a heartening feeling to feel actually that we both stuck up for each other. It wasn't about getting someone else. And I think that's what friendship is. It's about loyalty. Even if you've got to take the blame for something, it's the right thing to do.
Right. And in this book, actually, Semi gets Tame into trouble and sort of blames him for being the instigator of this magic growth potion, but because he feels that Tame's punishment is going to be lighter than his would be.
Okay,
that's interesting. So and Tame decides to take it, and then Tame is punished for that, and then his father finds out that he took the blame for his friend, and his father tells him that he was very brave to do that. But he also punishes him for doing that. So he said, you know, he was saying, you know, parents are strange. They, you know, he's telling me I did a good thing, but I'm also, you know, having to do lines for.
But isn't it also interesting, because I think as people are fickle and children are particularly so, depending on who was my favorite sister at any given point in time would depend entirely on how much trouble and blame I was going to lay at someone else's door. And that would change. I mean, that would change quite quickly. And sometimes you'd defend them to the very last, and other times, you know, you'd throw them under the bus quite happily. Mm-hmm. Which is also quite an interesting sort of aspect of growing up and knowing
the dynamics, learning the differences of siblings and how you... yes, I think so. I think just thinking of my five children, you know, it was him, it was her, you know, there was, but school friends were very different.
It's more, oh, yeah, no, that's a whole different kettle of fish.
Yes. But even with school friends, there was, I'm not forgiving him. And then, you know, after a while, perhaps becoming friends again and then standing up for each other again. And so there's a whole dynamic of the ups and downs of friendship going on.
And I think that children don't realize just how very important those relationships are and those dynamics, because that's how you learn what your moral code is. It's how it's formed, isn't it? By making these decisions in a time when you're young and squabbling, and it really the consequences are not great. And it's only as you get a little bit older that you start settling into who you are. And I think it's important that they have those experiences.
What matters. Yes. And I think books like these
they help.
Are extremely important in allowing children to sort of examine what they feel, because they may not agree, and they you know, maybe, but you've given them the opportunity to see what they would have done in that circumstance. But it's a very safe circumstance because they're just reading a book about characters in fiction.
Can I just very, very quickly remind our listeners that come September, we've got the children's reading group starting up again. So on the 23rd of September, it's the 9 to 11s, and the book is Muddle Earth by Paul Stewart and Chris Riddle. And then on September the 23rd, 11 plus, it's Maze Runner by James Dashner. So if those of you who are interested, read those books over the summer if you can, and then you'll be ready when it comes into the new season.
Great, yes. And we're going to take a short break for the news, and we'll be back with our guest reviewer, Yara Badri, and our book of the week, Before the Fall by Noah Hawley. Do stay tuned.
This is Talking of Books here on Dubai Eye 103.8.